Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Maryland public schools remain closed through at least May 15th. In Virginia and the District of Columbia, schools are closed through the remainder of the academic year. The challenges of distance learning during this stressful time are wide-ranging. Some students lack access to computers or the internet. Others lack transportation to pick up work packets. The Baltimore Sun reported last week that tens of thousands of public school students still have not connected with their teachers or schools since schools closed in mid-March. Today, a snapshot of how students with developmental or learning disabilities are coping. Renee Averett Sanzoni is executive director of the Parents' Place of Maryland, a nonprofit for families with children who have disabilities and special health care needs. Renee, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
What are you hearing from parents?
Well, what we are hearing for families is that, you know, one, obviously very concerned. Because, you know, a lot of our children are of the most vulnerable population, so very concerned about their children's health and well-being. But then their concern is around, oh my gosh, our kids are home now, and how is this all going to look, and how is this all going to work? And then the piece of, then how am I also going to juggle working myself if we're, you know, if I'm some of those families that are fortunate to be able to work from home? And then really feeling some frustration around the differences in how different systems are approaching virtual learning. You know, there were some school districts that got on this very, very, very quickly, and then there were some that took a lot longer, it felt like, to gear up with those pieces. So just a lot of uncertainty, really not sure how to navigate all of this.
What power do parents have to advocate for their children while distance learning is in place?
So families still have all of the same rights and responsibilities that they had when schools were open. So the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, which is the federal special education law that provides for services for children with disabilities and special health care needs, really all of those provisions are still in place. So what we have been telling families is IDEA for short, have not gone away. And so the schools are still obligated to provide services to families during this time of virtual learning. And so families still have available to them the same appeals process as they would as if their kids were in school. So, for example, if a school proposes some modifications or some adaptations to the child's individualized education program, and the family doesn't agree with it, they have a right to request an IEP meeting, going to have to be conducted virtually, to really have a conversation and sit down and really try to come to some form of a consensus about what would be the most doable and most appropriate supports and services for their child during this very unique situation. But it's really important for families to understand that they still have all of those same protections in place before we entered into COVID-19.
So, but let me try to go a little bit deeper into the example you used. You say if the school proposes a change in the a child's IEP, well, will schools necessarily alert parents? They should, but what if there seems to be some change going on that the parent doesn't quite recognize and it hasn't even been discussed?
We are hearing some situations where that has occurred. And what we say to families is that when if you've not heard from your school, as what we're telling families is, if you haven't heard from schools, if you haven't heard from your child's regular education teacher and your child's special education teacher, then parents should reach out to those teachers. Those teachers are working, right? They're doing it virtually like the rest of us or like a lot of us are. So reach out if you haven't heard. That's the first step.
Let me interrupt and be very clear. Who should parents talk to at their child's school about their concerns?
they would talk to the same folks that they would talk to if their school was in session. So, for example, if their child, whoever their child's special education teacher is, all right, say it's Ms. Jones, they would email Ms. Jones and say, you know, dear Ms. Jones, I understand that Baltimore City Schools has started virtual learning and I've not heard from you. Could we please set up a time that we could talk and discuss my child's IEP and how those services are going to look? And if, you know, if they do not hear back from their teacher, then they still follow that chain of command. So if they've not heard from their child's special education teacher, then they would go to the special education teacher's supervisor or an IEP chair team. And usually just having a reach out that says, can we set up a time to talk? Can we figure this out and what it needs to look like? All right. Looking forward to working together. That's if they haven't heard. But if they have heard from the school and the school, what the school is proposing or the school is suggesting, the parent doesn't agree, then the parent replies back to the special education teacher and says, thank you so much for getting this information to me. I really have some concerns and some questions, and I'd like to schedule an IEP meeting. Here are some dates and times that are good for me. Please let me know when we can meet. So that you're creating that documentation and that paper trail and going forward from there. And the school has to honor that request. And unfortunately, if the school doesn't, then again, the parent goes up the chain of command through the school system, following that process of making a good faith effort of trying to come up with something that's workable and doable for everybody that's involved.
That's Renee Averett Sansoni, head of the Parents' Place of Maryland, on the record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're speaking about how families of students with disabilities are adapting to the challenges of distance learning. Some parents are concerned that their child will lose some of the progress they had made in the fall and winter. What would you say to them, and what can they do?
The reality is all of our children are going to regress. Our children without disabilities and our children without special health care needs. So all of our children are going to regress. But when it comes to our children with who receive special education services, I understand that this is a huge concern. The reality is a family needs to get very familiar with their child's IEP. So what do the goals say? What do the objectives say? What should they be working on, right? And really begin to what we call document progress. So you take that IEP. We've developed a very simple form that families can access from our website about documenting progress. So where was your child when they left school? And then really looking at, are there things that weren't worked on or couldn't be worked on because of our virtual learning? Because sometimes there are going to be some of those situations. Was there something your child was doing before schools closed, and as this has progressed, they've lost that skill? So document it. Document it in writing. Get out your cell phone. Do a quick video. Really just documenting all of their progress or lack of progress so that when schools open back up, then you have your data to bring to the IEP team to say, here is what's happened in the months that schools were closed, and we really need to have a conversation about what we call compensatory education.
The public schools, Maryland's public schools, have been closed since March 12th. Is there a way to make this new reality easier for children?
I think there is. I think what we need to do is we really need to be, one, honest with our kids in an age-appropriate way, right, and explain the situation. I also think we need to really also just be very mindful about how learning can occur throughout the natural course of a day. And that while it may not be the traditional sitting in school at a desk during the school day, learning occurs in all kinds of avenues and all kinds of opportunities. Look at those opportunities to have your child help cook dinner. What do you want for dinner? Do you want this or do you want that? That's decision-making. That's choices. It's also a way of working on language at the same time. Well, let's pull up the cookbook. Let's pull down the recipe. That's working on literacy skills. What are the ingredients that we need? That's working on math skills at the same time. How do we measure? How do we cook? If something needs to cook for 10 minutes and we put it in at 4 o'clock, when do you think it's going to come out of the oven? So that we're working on those math skills. We're working on those social skills. Oh my gosh, we need to make a grocery list. So now we're working on writing, which is also fine motor skills. Then we're going to have to look at, okay, so maybe we don't want to take our kids to the grocery store, right? Because we want to keep them safe. But then when the groceries come home, how do we help, you know, bring those groceries in? Well, then we're now working on gross motor skills and physical activities. All of those can be just really natural learning that is occurring while they're working on just everyday pieces. And I think it's really important for families to understand is families really shouldn't look at this as if we are homeschooling, because when people make the decision to homeschool, that's a decision that lots of research, we really are dealing in unprecedented times. So I also think we just need to take a deep breath and cut ourselves a little bit of some grace and some slack about, okay, wait a minute, how can we just make these things occur in the natural occurrence of our day?
What tips do you have to help parents and kids manage their stress levels right now?
Take a lot of deep breaths, a lot of deep breaths, and really understand that it's very important to take care of yourself. And we've had some really horrific things happen in our country. And one of the biggest indicators of a child's well-being is the primary caregiver or caregivers, because all of our families look different now, taking care of themselves. So first and foremost is moms, dads, grandmamas, granddads, aunts, uncles need to take care of themselves first. We use a term in our office a lot, put on your own oxygen mask first. You know, when you're getting the safety announcement from the flight attendant when you're flying, right? And then you put it on the child that is accompanying you. So really, and I think that's very difficult for caregivers to think of, is that they need to put themselves first, right? And they need to take care of themselves first. Make sure they're getting enough sleep. Make sure that try to the best of your ability to establish some sort of a routine for yourself. And as you are doing those pieces for yourself, you are really sending a message to your child, it's going to be okay. We're in this together. We're here. And really talking about things in a way, again, age appropriate, but really just modeling that for our young child is really the most beneficial piece we can do for our children through these really unprecedented times.
A lot of great ideas. I appreciate your talking to us. Thank you.
You are welcome. Thank you.
Renee Averett-Sansoni is executive director of the nonprofit The Parents' Place of Maryland. At the On the Record page at WIPR.org, we have links to the Parents' Place webinar on resources for parents. I'm your host, Sheila Cast. Quick break now. When we're back, parents and students on the challenges and opportunities of distance learning.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. As school systems roll out their distance learning programs online and on paper, how are students with learning differences or developmental disabilities staying connected? This morning, we're sharing their perspectives. Here's Rico Winston and his son, Israel.
First and foremost, I'm a single parent. So Israel's 10. I've been raising him alone since he was 2 years old. With the transition with the homeschooling, and particularly like the virtual schooling, it's been stressful on my end. And it's with when an individual, Israel has an autism diagnosis. So he's on the autism spectrum, ASD. So it creates a lot of anxiety. He'll be excited to see his peers as well as his teacher, but it's not a familiar setting for him. And he's used to a routine. So the way that individuals that have autism, you know, Israel as a child, we've always had a schedule, what time he eats, what time he goes to bed, what he's doing at school. So he stays familiar with that schedule, and it becomes a comfort zone. So it can be difficult at times when it's a break in that pattern of familiarity that he had. They have set up, and I was going to let him, Israel. All right. But what have you been doing?
I spent time with my dad.
No, but on the computer in school. So you
I've been doing computer class. We do literacy and math.
Are you adding, subtracting?
Adding.
You're adding?
Yes. We practice Kung Fu. We read books, and we go out with each other.
How does it affect you? What would you want to do that you can't do?
I want to spend time with my family this summer, but I can't.
All right. All right. But, and I'm going to be honest, this has been a nightmare dealing with the school system because it's been so last minute. They didn't give you any leeway and, like, a lot of insensitivity and with Baltimore City public schools. And I understand everything was a rush. So this is a whole different dynamic for everyone. No one's ever experienced anything like this, and it was unforeseeable that it would happen. But at the same time, the teachers had a time period in which they created a curriculum on Google Classrooms and so forth. And I'm going to just vent to you for a second because there's a lot of privacy issues that concern me where things are done with Google Classrooms, ClassDojo, all those are Google platforms. So he has services through the Baltimore City Public Schools, occupational therapy, OT, as well as speech. And then outside of the school setting through his IEP, he's been at Kenny Krieger since he was 3 years old. And they've been diligent and excellent now. So I have an excellent relationship with Kenny Krieger. And you like Kenny Krieger, don't you? Like,
yes.
And he loves going to Kenny Krieger. So it's a big difference. So the school system, taking them a little bit longer to get acclimated, whereas Kenny Krieger was on the ball immediately. But it's a difference in the setting when he's with his peers, and as opposed to him being home, he doesn't have any siblings, so it's just the two of us. So I get to understand where he's lacking, and I can advocate for my son more diligently and focused, because I'm seeing where he's lacking and where he needs assistance, whereas a teacher sees it every day. It's been stressful. It's been heartbreaking. I mean, when you have a child and you want to do everything you can for that child and protect them, you want them to have the best opportunity to, and propel them in the future. But, there's unforeseeable circumstances like this COVID-19. And see, one of the biggest things as a parent is having respite or self-care, because I'm always so engulfed in bettering my son or being supportive of my son and feeling I'm not doing enough or I haven't done enough. So being able to talk to other parents, and we have a dad's group at ARC of Baltimore, and it's called the Dad's Group. And we met virtually the other day. And these are the things that a lot of parents that either they're not aware that's there or they don't have the support where somebody's reaching out to them and saying, or checking on them, making sure they're okay. Because it's a challenge, but the rewards are so great.
This is On the Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're hearing from parents and students about how schools are offering special education resources from a distance. Denise Stringer lives in Baltimore County. Her son Alex, who's in fifth grade, receives special education services as well as occupational therapy.
Yeah, so at school, he typically would receive 4 to 5 Orton-Gillingham structured reading lessons a week. It's a very structured way of teaching reading that focuses back on a lot of phonics and phonemic awareness for kids who, you know, need a little bit more remediation and intervention in that area. Currently, he's receiving 2 direct instruction Orton-Gillingham lessons with his special education teacher with the members of his small group that he normally would complete the lesson with in school. So that's been great. And then the teachers provided additional resources for at-home practice so that he can do some of the skills to kind of keep in between the classes. And then his special education teacher has been meeting with him an additional time once a week to lend support in math, because we see that have a little bit of a disconnect between the work that he's required to do for his math, even with the voice thread lessons and an online meeting with his teacher, he still needs a lot of one-on-one remediation and help there. Not being in class and not having the chance to practice and get feedback and hear what peers are thinking and share his answers with others and just have that more genuine learning experience. It's been hard for him to just have to do a reading, complete a writing, look at a video, complete a math task. So, he's needed a lot of help from me, really sitting with him, completing most of his work throughout the week. I cannot say enough about how I feel Baltimore County, or what Baltimore County has provided online for students who do have access online. And Alex's teachers have been great at communicating and talking with the kids and just making this feel as not crazy, I guess, as it could be. But even with a feeling that, you know, they've checked every box and there's not much more that others can do, just that lack of time and instruction and classroom, just what the kids would get with their teacher is just not there. And I can see already just, you know, working so closely with Alex that moving into next year, it's not going to be able to be like, oh, here's sixth grade standards, here's how we start sixth grade, here's what how we would kind of move through the standards. That's not going to be where he is. And I just worry, you know, how are schools going to adjust to that? How are they going to kind of jump back in and know where kids are and what they know, what they need to know, and just recognizing what a lack of instruction there has been, and how do we recover from that and move forward, to me is going to be the big test, you know. I'm very grateful and thankful for everything that Alex is receiving from his school and his teachers and what is the support that we do have. And you know, I feel very fortunate that we are where we are, and recognizing that, there's going to be a lot of needs next year for a lot of students. And that's where I hope Baltimore County puts their focus now, is what are we going to do when we get back to school?
Denise Stringer is the mother of a fifth grader in Baltimore County. Earlier, we heard from Baltimore City parent Rico Winston and his son Israel. A note, we reached out to Baltimore City Schools asking to speak to a special education teacher. We did not hear back by our deadline. At the On the Record page at WYPR.org, we have links to more reporting on distance learning and special education. I'm Sheila Cast. Thanks for listening to On the Record. Hope you'll join us again tomorrow. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.